It begins with absence and desire. It begins with blood and fear. It begins with the discovery of witches.
Welcome to episode 42 of the All Souls Podcast.
I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer.
Welcome to episode 41 of the All Souls Podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer.
Welcome to episode 42 of the All Souls Podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer.
And what are we here to talk about today?
I mean, they've been casting all week.
Well, they've already cast because they're done filming, but they're announcing them.
Which is why I think it's strange. I mean, I'm happy that they did that, but it was like they've done, and to be fair, they've been under the COVID veil, right? Because COVID's had everything kind of shut down. So all of the things that they've been doing, they've been, and with quarantines and everything, they've been able to do kind of under the disguise of night. You know what I mean? It's like they haven't been having a bunch of paparazzi. It's not like there's people roaming around on set or sneaking on a set and taking pictures or long lens photoing that they had with the filming of season two. Because when season two started filming, you know, there was no quarantine. So it was announcements and pictures because they had to announce it because pictures were going to get out. So, but I think that because they've been able to kind of work in such secrecy over the last however many months of filming they've been doing it, they've been able to get away with us not knowing anything. And we've all been kind of distracted, you know, prepping for two and, you know, COVID.
And I don't think it's quote unquote get away with, although, yeah, if that was it, they could. I think it was that they were worried about press, understandably, not worried. They were working on press for their upcoming season two premiere. They had to go through season two and we're in literally smack dab in the middle, just past the middle of season two airing. So
but think of how much easier it must have been for them to keep closed sets.
Oh, heck yeah.
Because of, you know, because of COVID. No, you can't come in here because you'll ruin the quarantine of our set. You know, everyone here is tested and safe and we can't allow anyone here.
They've said a little bit, and I'm really curious for our fellow Outlander fans, like what information, knowing Outlander, we'll be lucky to get anything from set. It's always going to be highly sanitized, beautifully packaged, sweet stuff is what we get from the set of Outlander. And I'm not saying that's bad, because again, we're happy with anything. Starz is notoriously secretive.
Well, because even with Scotland's right to roam.
Well, yeah. Okay, fair enough. Yes.
Oh, yeah. But even with Scotland's right to roam, it's like everyone's still kind of quarantining. I mean, I know they're not under strict quarantine right now in Scotland, but they have been.
Well, I'm talking more about being on set. Like when they're at the studio, there's nobody there.
They're at the studio, absolutely. But even when they film out in the wild, you know what I mean? It's like people tend to wander and want to view. But now they have a legitimate reason to keep people off their set. I bet Outlander like filming crews are like loving this.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't even, when you said that, I was thinking only about All Souls or Discovery Witches. But yeah, I think that is going to be an interesting new addition to Outlander filming. And it would be interesting. Yeah, it's just interesting to see to find out all this information, or what information. We don't have any information. It's interesting to view the little things that we've seen through the lens of COVID, right? We know that they've had a very, very closed, a very protected, very well set up set, and that they had to shut down a few times. I don't know if it was because of exposure or illness. It doesn't matter. That's, you know, private health information. But yeah, you're right. As far as Outlander goes, the right to roam might be a right to roam and stay, you know, like 1,000 feet away. But whereas before you'd have people in the landscape or on the land, or, you know, even in Glasgow, right? Even if they're filming downtown, whereas, you know, you could only close the streets or close a thing to a certain extent. You have, let's just put it this way. Most of the photos we get that are not highly sanitized, beautifully packaged, that are taken, they're taken by fans or by people who stumble upon a scene, right? Upon filming. And yeah, I have a feeling it'll be interesting to, we'll have to bring this conversation over to our Outlander show too. I have a feeling that there might be, you might be right as far as their, not their talons, but their claws. They might be showing more claws now as far as, you know, not allowing people even closer, even given Scotland's right to roam law. So that'll be very interesting to watch as Outlander filming goes on. But back to this. Yeah. So we've gotten a few nice casting. We got Chris.
We did. And then a couple members of the New Orleans brood.
Yeah. Yes. Oh my gosh. There's a Geraldine whom I did not remember, but
you know, so,
but she's there.
My, and this is not a concern. It's not a concern. Concerns are not, it's not the right word, but I'm kind of excited by exactly how much they're going to be doing with the next book in the next series. Like you, when you think about things that they could have just not filmed at all and been like, meh, that's just filler. We can have it happen off screen and talk about it later. They could have totally done that with the entirety of New Orleans, but they didn't.
Remember, and this is not, if I'm not mistaken, not Shadow of Night, Book of Life is the longest of the three. I mean, Shadow of Night was long, but I think, I could be wrong. Shadow of Night could still be the longest. But what I'm trying to say is that whichever is the longest, Book of Life is certainly not short. And to go from 8 episodes to 10 and then down to 7, whew, that I, especially when they're doing things like including New Orleans, it's not scary. Like you said, it's not a worry because I know that they will do a bang up job of anything they put their, you know, sights on.
Well, it's all in the name of adaptation. So, I mean, it's just a matter of how it's adapted and
it's all in the cutting.
We're going to be fine, guys. We're going to be fine. They're taking good care of us.
Yeah, it's in the writing and in the cutting. It'll be fine. It's just, whew, okay. Fewer episodes in season one. Okay. But the good thing is, I don't know if it's good. Well, it is good because it means it'll last longer. So we're still in the middle of season two, which we're going to get to in just a second. And okay, just for guesses or just for giggles, there's no way we're going to get season three in 2021, right? It does not belong in 2021. It belongs at least in 2022. Do you agree?
I mean, if you've been listening to the interview with Rob Lane, they're working on finishing three. So the editing and the music and all of those things are happening. So there's no reason that they technically couldn't release it. Probably not this year, but definitely in 2022.
Oh, heck yeah. Like, there's no need to wait till 23, but 22. I just don't think we're going to get two. We don't get two seasons of anything in one year.
We should. You know what? We do when they split a season into two, like the first season of Outlander.
That's one season still. It's just a really odd split.
But they had an A and B. That was almost two seasons. Anywho, let's
go on to 207.
We're moving out of our announcements that aren't announcements, and we're going to move into discussion of 207, Discovery of Witches Season 2, Episode 7, wherein there is 0% Philippe. 100% less Philippe this week than last week.
Oh, well, see, I wouldn't say that.
But the 100% more Glasgow this week than last week.
I said Glasgow and I meant Galloglass because I put those words together in my head and I miss Scotland. Anyway, go ahead. And he's Scottish. I'm going to call him Glasgow from now on. That's funny. I just write GG because it's easier. So it's funny you say there's no Philippe. Now, is there a presence of Philippe, like the actor Philippe? No. But I would say, other than maybe episode one, no. Two, I'm not sure what happened between two or three. Maybe it happened in four. But we get hints of Philippe early on in the season. And I know that's not what you're saying. But I would argue that while Philippe is physically present in 205 and 206, that Philippe's presence is felt in almost, at least thus far, and again, maybe not the first episode or two, but almost every episode. And definitely his presence is felt here. And numerous times, I have it throughout my notes. I will, I'll mention it when I get to it. Yeah, he's definitely not here, but his presence is here and he is felt. He's definitely felt here. So this episode, we start, it is 1591. So we've gone through a new year. It is Bohemia or on the way. No, they've reached Bohemia.
Now, I find it interesting to point out, you're right, it is another, the year has turned. However, I was listening to the book the other night during my sleepless hours when I wake up in the middle of the night for no damn reason. So I put on an audiobook and fall back asleep. I just happened to be listening to the portion where they're getting chastised by another character for staying in the past too long. And they're saying, you've been here 7 months. That is way too long to be, you've gone native, he says. You've gone native is what his fear is that if you go too far, you can't go back, right? So 7 months there in the past. They are in the past for 7 months at least. 7 months is when they get called out on it, which means they probably head home soon thereafter. However, 7 months.
Yeah, it's a bit.
And they probably spent half of that traveling to Bohemia.
And then half of it, well, not half of it, almost the same amount of time traveling from Bohemia back to England. So he's again Matthew Royden. He is there on behalf of QE1. And he will not take no for an answer. And he asks someone, find Galloglass. I even wrote Gigi. Find Gigi for me. Us. They're led into...
Yeah, and Pierre, and my man Pierre. But then he's also like, I'm no mere ambassador. He's like, you have no idea who you just called a mere ambassador.
And they're led into a waiting chamber, which is Rudolph's hunting lodge. And they're granted... Now,
you could fit my whole house in that room of the hunting lodge.
Well, probably my apartment too. So one of the things that we're not going to like... I think... I'm sure we mentioned it before. I know... I'm pretty sure it was mentioned in the series already. And we're not going to like... There's no point in like harping on it because it really doesn't add to the storyline or even our discussion. But yes, Summer, I think Summer and I have kind of joked, maybe not so nicely, about Rudolph. And if you guys caught it, there's little smatterings of German here, because even though they're in Bohemia, this is the Holy Roman Emperor Rudolph von Habsburg.
Yeah. And I wonder if they gave him a beard so we wouldn't have to see his deformed chin.
Cover the chin, Summer, stop, stop. That's where I was going. So Summer and I have kind of alluded to it before in a not so nice way. So the Habsburg, you guys just, I mean, go Google it. Google image search. Any painting of, well, not any painting, but numerous paintings of well-known royal Habsburgs.
It's called the Habsburg chin for a reason.
Habsburger kin.
Because they were all intermarried.
Well, not all, but they frequently intermarried, yes.
And they all ended up with the same chin.
So,
oof, too frequently. They were marrying people that were way closer on the family tree than they should have been.
So they're led into a waiting chamber. It's Rudolph's hunting lodge. And they're granted a brief audience.
I wonder if they found that to be like a source of pride. Like, oh, he's got the chin. No one will ever doubt him.
I don't think it was a pride.
He is purely a Habsburg. He has the chin.
They're granted a brief audience and they go see Herrn Rudolph or Seine Majestät. They were saying imperial. It is imperial, but I'm trying to find kaiserliche. Seine kaiserliche und königliche Majestät, which means imperial and royal. Sorry. So I think he's just imperial. I don't think he's royal. Kaiser, yeah. Kaiser just means imperial. Kaiser is emperor. Kaiserlich, imperial. So they went, but when you're saying your majesty, your imperial majesty,
isn't he just the Kaiser?
Kaiserliche, kaiserliche Majestät. It's literally a direct translation from English.
Okay, gotcha.
So they're granted a brief audience to see him. As Royden, he's there representing the queen, his queen. And he said he needs to speak with Edward Kelly. Rudolph says he's not there. He's in Prague. Matthew's all, And Diana's like, let me take this one. And Diana steps in to begin to woo him. By the way, by this point, Rudolph already knows that he's a vamp. And he calls Diana, one of our favorite terms from the book, La Diosa de la Casa. I don't think it's Casa, but La Diosa.
La Diosa. Look, I think if you had to have all seen them, but on a second viewing, you need to just spend an entire episode watching Matthew Good react to everything going on around him because he is so...
This is an episode full of his reactions. It's hysterical.
And I'm not even talking about blood ragey stuff. Just, he does some double takes, some triple takes, some quadruple takes about the things going on around him that are so hysterical to me. Like, I didn't even catch it the first time and I was like, bah! Like, if you took every episode and picked one character to just follow their track for the entire episode, you will not be disappointed for watching Matthew for this entire episode. So good.
Well, Diana's had some good ones, but no one has had as many. I'm sure I did not see them all, as many as you are talking about, but I saw enough to know exactly what you're talking about when you said it, because it was like, oh, it was so funny. And I was telling some, when I watch it to take notes, I use my AirPods. Now, it's not because I'm trying to be extra. It's because I want to hear all the stuff they say, because the music, I mean, I hear the music almost, I'm not saying I catch it all, but I hear a lot of themes, yeah, and the music, you know, whatever. But it's the dialogue, right? You want to hear the dialogue. And it's, I noticed when I started watching episode one, I was like, I'm turning it up all the way on my viewing station. I'm missing some of the words that are, you know, especially by dudes, right, who have lower voices and they're kind of saying it like mumbling or grumbling under their breath. Like, I'm not hearing this. I'm missing lines. So I'm like, oh, be smart, Ginger. What do you have? So I got my AirPods and I've been using them. And usually I only use one in one ear because I like to, in case it, you know, once it fails, I'll use the other one and charge it back up. So I only always have one. Like right now, we're recording. I'm using an AirPod. I only use one because I don't need to hear. Okay, I mean this in the nicest possible way. Number one, Summer and I are not watching something. We're not narrating something. We're having a discussion, which means there's only like one thing to listen to, and that's, yes, her tone of voice, but just mostly her words and what she's saying. When you're watching something, like, you need to hear tone. You need to hear, you know, the mellifluous low tones of someone who you can't hear otherwise. So yeah, so I've been, since episode one, when I figured that out, I've been using my AirPods. And anyway, so the first few times I watched it, I didn't. When I sat down to watch it with my AirPods to take notes for this, Oh my gosh, there were so many things I missed. Part of them, I mean, yeah, I'm sure I missed some of the facial expressions too, but there were so many things I missed that like I got this time. I think I 100% think it's because I'm wearing AirPods and I catch so much more. And I'm like, oh, I was like, I busted a gut this episode. It was pretty dang funny. I started to write something kind of judgmental about the German, and I'm like, didn't they have a German expert on this? And then I was like, oh, and then later, well, I think it's because of the way someone pronounces something, but later on when the same word is pronounced correctly, I was like, oh, he mispronounced it, but he was actually trying to pronounce the correct word. I misheard it. And that's the problem with mispronunciation, is that if you mispronounce something and a native or native, like whatever, a fluent speaker hears it and they understand, or they believe they understand what you're trying to say, then it's going to sound like crazy off, right? But then when I realized, and I'll go over it later, when I realized what everyone else was saying and that the person who mispronounced it just used the wrong initials consonant sound, I was like, oh, okay, so he was trying to say that. Never mind. So the word is right, his pronunciation is still wrong. Anywhoozle. So yeah, I definitely recommend, yes, watch it with, okay, AirPods, or if you can or need to, it's great either way, with subtitles. Summer, you still watch with subtitles, right?
I do when it's possible, but when I'm watching recorded items that don't have the subtitles already recorded with them, I don't get to watch them. Which is why I had such a hard time with, like, two episodes ago with understanding what Kit and Louisa were saying, because I was like, wait, what? They were talking. They were having a very private conversation.
Yeah. No, that's true. It actually would be good to go back and watch with the captions.
Don't think I'm not gonna.
So Diana steps in to woo Rudolf, and as I said, Rudolf already knows that Matthew is a vamp, and he calls Diana La Diosa, the goddess of the hunt, and Matthew informs him that they are Mawaid. And then we get our Pyrex opening. And by the sound, it was like, whoa, that's a big one. By the sound of his whistle, we have a Gigi. And one hug with La Diosa is all it takes. He says, you've mated. I should call you auntie now. Okay, that was really bad German. That was bad Scots accent.
That was our first auntie.
Yes, it was our first auntie.
But also, how uncomfortable was that? Everyone looked super uncomfortable. First of all, I don't think you're supposed to say that. Those are the words that are in your head. You're not supposed to say that out loud. He basically just said, hey, y'all are doing it. I can smell that on you. Y'all smell like sex.
No, he's like, there's been insertion. Congratulations.
You finally got up the nerve to put it in, buddy. High five.
Oh, wow. That's good. That's good. Let's go on. So I was like, wait, hold on a second. So you can smell it? No, it must a smell. I don't know. Maybe because their smells are now permanently intermingled. I don't know.
But that's the whole thing. It's like they talked about it in the last episode about how Philippe knew they weren't mated, or two episodes ago. And then it's a callback to two episodes ago when they told us that everyone would be able to tell, at least the other vampires would be able to tell. So but to straight out be called out like that, I haven't seen you in a couple of months. Hey, you smell like sex.
It's a lot.
Awkward.
So Gigi takes them to see Jack, who'd come to visit them because
Francois doesn't know what to do with a whiny baby. She's not a very good caretaker for babies. She's like, I was beside myself. This was not in my job requirement when you originally hired me. I brought this kid back. So you know how to deal with him. You deal with him.
And Matthew's not happy about it. Now, Kelly is there. They are sure of it. And they think through him, they'll get the book. There's a knock at the door, and there's a small trunk delivered.
That was a police knock. That was a police knock. I've never heard a postman knock like that. That was a pissed off delivery guy. Like, I can't believe I'm delivering this late at night.
A police knock brings in a small trunk for La Diosa, and it's an automaton of the goddess Diana. And Matthew is not happy. And this is where, I mean, I guess earlier, I'm not saying it. It probably starts before I'm saying right now. But right here is where you can absolutely start watching Matthew's reactions. He is not happy. Diana wants to try and woo the emperor. And she says, look, okay, fine. I know you think it's dangerous. It probably is. Let me take Gigi. And while Matthew, he's like, I'll take Gigi and go try and woo the emperor. And while Matthew goes and looks for Kelly. So Diana goes to give a gift to Rudolf, which he couldn't care less about. But there's a long line of gift givers. After a few moments there, Gigi's all, as they're waiting and as they're walking to wait, Gigi tells Diana all about blood rage and how things things are worse and harder now that they're mated. And so, you know, it's kind of filling us in.
Yeah, but how pissed off is Galloglass for getting this kind of a job? She offers him up to Matthew. Well, I'll just take Galloglass with me to stand in line. I'm going to take him someplace and we're just going to queue together.
Exactly. You'll be my line holder. Gigi doesn't want to wait, though. He's like, just wait. Hold on. I'll take care of this. He goes up and tells them that, you know, I have a thing for you, and not like a sexual thing, but like an actual item for you. He gets them through the line quicker. And Diana, when he first tells her that, she looks kind of horrified and embarrassed, like, oh my God, he's doing this, not me. And then just before he comes, he says that, right? He's like, I'll take care of this. I'm going to go. And he goes off to do whatever he's going to do. Diana looks a little horrified. And then literally within a second, there's a beat, and then a dude turns around and he introduces himself as Benjamin Fuchs. And he calls her immediately by her name. Not just that she's attached, she's a de Clermont, but also Madame, which is, of course, a woman who's married. Madame de Clermont. And he calls her by her name. And he says, the blood vow is new and hard to miss. Like, it's really strong. He says in their conversation, he says, oh, I fear I'm beneath their interests. And he's all, meaning like, you know, are you still involved with the family? Or are you, you know, whatever he was saying, he was like, I'm below their interests. They don't care for me. He's like, I've been expelled by my family, basically. But goes no further. And then he leaves. And the next scene, we see Matthew breaks into a building and tries to find stuff.
That was so weird, him breaking into that building, because the guy walked away like, he's like, I'm only open for appointments and you don't have an appointment with me, so go away. And if you want to go browse, go to the market. And then he walks away like that was going to stop Matthew. And then Matthew literally just walks over and pushes the door open. He's like, fuck that guy.
Diana is miraculously, with the help of Gigi, able to get to Rudolf. And Gigi, like I said, he's done his magic. And he did so by saying he has a painting to give him.
Not only a painting, a very specific painting, one of which she does definitely not have.
As they walk in, you'll see that there are extras, and you'll hear it too, but you'll see that there are extras playing instruments. Those were what Rob Lane had to compose for. When production told him, we don't want it to be cliche. We don't want it to be cliche Elizabethan. So no lutes, no viols. And then they film extras faking playing lutes and viols. So he has to compose for it.
As you do.
And it happens more than once. It happens here and then a little bit later.
Sorry, guys.
Anyway, that was hysterical. And you wouldn't know that unless you listened to our interview. So they lied. He lied anyway. But she did want to thank him for his gift, the automaton. But she gives him So they lied about the painting, but she's like, I do have a book for you. And he's like, he dismisses it right away. He's like, he doesn't even hide.
So she brought him a book he doesn't want. He knows the book. He's like, there's nothing in this book for me.
Exactly. And you're like, he's like, you're just adding to my hoard. Don't stop giving me extra weight. Woman.
No. He's like, bitch, I already got rid of this book. Why are you bringing it back to me? Fuck, this is like a boomerang.
Yes. And she goes, nothing is worthless to an inquiring mind. Now, whether he agrees or disagrees about the book, he's flattered because I can't say what she's trying to do, but potentially there are two things she could do there, right? There's flattery, right? You have an inquiring mind, and I recognize that in you, Kaisa.
She said to Matthew in the last scene that she told Matthew in the previous scene that her plan was to make him think he needed this book, that she could convince him that this book was worth more than the other book.
So she could be, so she's trying to convince him, but so part of it is like, this book is not nothing, you know, it's not worthless if you have a certain type of mind. So he's definitely appealing to his hoarding nature, his alchemical interests, his mind, his whatever, but also kind of, she's appealing to his qualities that she believes might help them if he is like kind of placated or you know, ego stroke. But she's also kind of slapping him one, and I don't mean sexual, slap on the wrist or a slap on the face, not a slap, like a tap on the cheek, like, well, you know, euer kaiserliche Hoheit, nothing is worthless to an inquiring mind. Dinah is sketch. They believe a person called Holbert might be Kelly, because he's not referred to. And by Steina, okay, this is back when Matthew was about to break into the building. Summer's right. They come across the dude. The guy's like, I don't have anything. My calendar's all filled up. You'll have to go. If you want something, go to the library or whatever. Or no, go to the market and browse. And that guy's name is Steina. And so Steina locks away, and that's when Matthew goes to, like, you know, break in. I wrote, Steina is a little bit sketch. And what they find in going through his stuff and in the office or in his library is that there's been someone named Tolbert who's visited quite a few times, and they believe that could be Kelly.
Well, because he's only going there under the cover of night, like they're only ever meeting after the sun goes down. So it's like they're assuming that because that's the only person that they're secreting in and out of this building that they are wagering and betting on the fact that that is in fact Kelly. They're not wrong, by the way.
Then Rabbi Lowe. We meet Rabbi Lowe and they all go to the Kaiser's Kunstkammer. The first time, so when they first say it, when Rudolf, and yes, I'm doing it like the German because that's just how I roll. So when Rudolf mentions the Kammer, the chamber, the first time, and I was like, huh? How do you get ch out of sh? No. So he said Kunstkammer. And I'm like, oh, what the hell? I don't even know what that is in German. And I speak more German than our emperor here. Anyway, it's the word is Kunst. But I thought, because there's two different types, probably more commas. There's Kunstkammer and Schatzkammer.
Like an art chamber?
Now, Kunst is art. Yes, an art chamber or an art collection, a place where you have art. The Schatzkammer is a treasure chamber or a place where you put your treasures. So when he first said, and yeah, I know it was art in there, but there's also treasures in there, right? Well, things that we would probably say are treasures too. But when he first said Kunstkammer, he said Kunstkammer. And I was like, wait, what? Because we don't have scripts. I wasn't reading what he was saying. I was listening. And even as a German speaker, I was like, I cannot even make sense of that word. Kammer, I got, but not Kunst. And I thought, oh, maybe he, because I'm like, how do you make sh, because I'm thinking Schatzkammer. How do you make Schatz or Kunst mean shots? Like, I'm like, what universe does that equal? They don't. So I'm like, okay, I let it go. I'm like, okay, it's just not good pronunciation, but really off. Like, he got comma, but how do they not have someone who's a language expert telling him, no, it's pronounced like this. And there was, as I said, spatterings of full German sentences, not a lot, but in the very beginning when they come in, they're not accosted, but they're confronted by some guards and they speak German. They start out. And then there's a little bit of German later on. Anyway, so when I heard it, I was like, ha, I cannot even make it fit. But later, the word Kunstkammer is used quite a few times. And like, ah, okay. So Kunstkammer can be closer to Kunstkammer. Because I was like, oh gosh, please thank you. Because I was hurting my German-speaking brain trying to make it fit. It didn't. Because it's not the same word.
Okay. So my commentary on this scene has nothing to do with how he does or doesn't pronounce the words correctly. It has more to do with the content of the scene, which is actually the fact that he travels with all of that art. They came from the castle to the hunting lodge and brought all of his treasures with him. You can never, ever complain about a woman overpacking ever again. If she wants to bring a pair of shoes for every night, you let her bring a pair of shoes for every night, because at least she didn't pack all of her treasures like a dragon taking his hoard with him.
That's true. We can't ever complain about women, ever. So it being, you know, source of pride for him, obviously, the Kaiser shows them all around. There's like a unicorn horn, if I saw correctly, or some horn. There are men of clay.
It was a cup that was made out of a horn. And I don't even understand how that's possible, unless the unicorn was huge, or if they were somehow able to like stretch the horn in such a way, or maybe the horn was part of something else. I don't know. I have no idea how that was made of a unicorn horn.
It could have been even a rhino horn.
Unicorns aren't real. I'm like, unicorns aren't real. Well, so if they're not real, then it doesn't really matter what it was made of.
But rhinos have one horn. So if you read about it, the history of the mythology of unicorns, people at one point think that rhinos may have been considered unicorns, not in the same way that we see them as white, you know, thin, horsey type things, but a four-legged creature with a tail and a horn. And if you use a rhino horn, depending on the size, it could be that large. But I'm not saying that's what it was.
I feel pretty positive there was some wandering peddler roaming around the countryside who convinced him that that was made out of a unicorn horn.
Oh, surely, surely. So meanwhile, he's showing him the stuff and Gigi's looking around. He's like, I'm going to scope this out. Diana, walking around, flattering the emperor, says she wouldn't be surprised if he even had the philosopher's stone.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. So then after dark, Edward, just as they thought, is being brought to Steina's offices, library, whatever. And yes, he's a prisoner. And they are met by Matthew. And was it Matthew and Pierre? Or was it Matthew and Gigi?
I think it's Pierre. Because Gallo Glass was at the court with Diana.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So it's Matthew and a dude. Likely Pierre. So when they're confronting each other, Kelly, like, he knows Matthew, right? They're both from the court of QE1. So of course he knows he's a vampire. He calls him a werewolf. And so that's not a surprise. Or it should remind us of what, you know, of whom we're in a conversation with or whom we're watching. Matthew says he knows he stole the book The Book of Life from D. There's a little, I mean, I guess you call it a confrontation.
It's my book. It talks to me.
Edward Kelly goes nuts. I mean, he's already nutter, I guess, but he's going crazy town. The soldiers are like, okay, we tried. Let's go back. And as they like take him back, he's shrieking. It begins with absence and desire, blood and fear. It begins with the discovery of witches. Hot diggity dang da bop. The next day, Matthew and Diana go together to see Rabbi Lowe. Matthew, on their way, tells her that Kelly was raving. Diana believes they can trust Lowe. And when they get there, Lowe calls him Matthew, son of Philippe. Did you pick up on that? So not only because Philippe is mentioned, okay, fine, right? Big whoop. If you ever, and I don't mean you, I mean anyone, if anyone who's read the Old Testament or even the beginning of the New Testament, when they have all the begats, well, that's in the New Testament. But anyway, that is a very...
Well, in Scotland, it's the Max and Max and Max.
There you go. And so it's not solely too Jewish. It is something that is very common in the Middle East. People in Arabic speakers, people of that culture, that language at least reflects something similar, right? Someone, Ibn, someone. Yeah. So, but I never caught that before. So rather than just say Matthew de Clermont, he is Matthew, son of Philippe. So his personality or his identity is still the de Clermont family, but from the point of view of a Jewish rabbi, which I found fascinating. It's just a very small thing that if you don't hear it, you don't hear it. And it's small enough to it doesn't stick out as in, you know, take you out of the scene, but I loved it. It was a wonderful touch. It makes me want to go back and see in the book if they did it or if it was added for the show, but either way, I loved it. It was so nice. And then he says, a witch, a vampire and a Jew meeting in secret. I don't know why that made me laugh so much, but it did. Diana starts. Now, she says she saw a yellow circle. Now, Summer, I have to ask you, do you remember the circle that she's talking about? I don't remember it.
It's on his jacket.
Oh, okay.
It's on his coat. It's marking him as other.
Yes. And
it's kind of like the precursor to the star. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I picked up on that. Again, it was so dark. It wasn't easy for me to see right at that moment. She asks if Rudolf brought him here to study a book, meaning Lowe. And Lowe says, this is his answer. He doesn't say yes or no. He says, I knew as soon as I saw it, I was not the one God had chosen to read it. So Rudolf has convinced himself that Lowe, or had convinced himself that Lowe could decipher the book. But Lowe's like, that's not me. He doesn't talk to me. Back with the fam. A letter came for Diana. Emperor summons her. Matthew is not having it.
He's also not invited.
No, he's not. But he's going to be there. She wants to convince Rudolf to let her read the book. She's like, trust me, trust me. And Matthew's all, it's not a matter of trust. But Gigi says, both of you join the hunt. You guys go there and I will try to steal the book. And then we can all leave. How's that? And she's like, what about Kelly? And he's like, we don't know. We got to do this. So they go.
Well, what he says is, if we take the book, he won't need Kelly anymore. So if the book goes missing, then he won't need Kelly and we'll get Kelly back. He will free Kelly if he doesn't have the book. Because the only reason he's keeping Kelly right now is because Kelly thinks he can read it because the book is talking to him. So I think if you took the book out of the equation, then there's no reason to keep Kelly. That's where he was going with that.
And at the hunt, when they arrive all together, Rudolf has only asked for Diana, but as I said, Matthew wasn't invited. But, you know, he's like, fine, we'll make do. But he finds him a bird. And he makes a whole show about Artemis, this beautiful, large, white bird, goddess of the hunt, you know, the Greek form. And that's another indirect, even if it's not on purpose by the emperor. It's another, potentially, you could potentially choose to look at it as a reminder of Philippe's presence, at least in spirit. Philippe was, you know, that the ruins where he not promised her, but dedicated her to Artemis. Artemis is the Greek form or the Greek form of the Roman goddess Diana. It's Artemis in the Greek pantheon. And so his bird is named Artemis. So there's so many goddess and Diana references in this chapter. It's kind of ridiculous, but I love it. So Artemis is his bird. Look, isn't this so pretty? And he completely is signaling. And he did it before, but this is like almost overt. He's signaling that he wants to take Diana, right? He's just like all over this bird. And he starts out.
He's keeping Artemis for himself.
Well, he starts out saying, look how beautiful this bird is. And at first you can't tell what he's going to do. And he's like, oh, no, 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 no. This is my bird. And then he gives Matthew something that is kind kind of, at first, seemingly laughable.
The little tiny brown one.
And then Matthew, and then he says, you can have Sokka. But then, and they're like, but then Matthew takes it. And Matthew, because he's Matthew and he's lived a freaking long time and knows like all the histories, connects the name with a warrior of history and says, you know, this is great. She is small but mighty, basically. And the emperor doesn't like that. And this is what the emperor, he did not say this. This is what he was saying. It's not the size of the bird, it's how you use it. So meanwhile, and it wasn't actually one, but it looked like it at first. I wrote, meanwhile, Gigi is going down his own oubliette. But no, it was like a skylight.
Dude, can we say how that was so hysterical for me? Because he falls down in a Superman, like a superhero pose. You know that pose that all the superheroes make when they land? That like knee, that kneel with one hand down. I was like, oh, good Lord.
That was funny. You know that?
Thievery with the side of superhero pose.
Yes, it is definitely a superhero pose. But, and yes, there were superheroes before Terminator. But the first time I remember seeing that pose, at least etched in my brain, is a naked, what's his name from Terminator? That's what I remember.
That's literally every superhero lands in that pose.
I know. Absolutely. Even the girls, even the females. Meanwhile, Gigi is going down his own shaft.
That's even worse than the things that I say on purpose.
Something tells me Stephen Cree would actually appreciate that faux pas. That. So it's actually the skylight into the Kunstkammer.
And to be fair, he didn't go down his own shaft. He went down his own orifice.
That's true. It was a shaft of light. It was like light when you're looking at it. But you're right. It wasn't a shaft. It wasn't a tube. It was a hole. So does he find a book? We don't know. Well, okay, he doesn't. We know that. But he finds something. And then the music ascends, really like this ascension of really high-pitched dissonance. And that is the sound. I can't say it's not always associated with the book, but it definitely is a sound that something is potentially magically dangerous-ish. And so that, even though we know he didn't do it, but the music is kind of like throwing you, like it's a red herring, right? The music is kind of making us potentially think he got something.
Oh, he got something, all right. This just wasn't the book.
Back to the hunt. They're talking. Diana, always trying to get more info, says, huh, Rabbi Lowe doesn't seem to know very much, does he? And the emperor's like, yeah, let's not talk about him anymore. Matthew, please release your bird. You can't hold on to him the whole time.
He's like, are you gonna even try?
Are you worried about letting her loose? When Matthew goes to release his bird, and again, remember, okay, not that we forgot, Matthew is a vampire. He hears everything, right? Everything. The emperor knows he's a vampire, but he's the emperor. He doesn't care. He knows he's safe, right? He's safe. So what does he say to Diana when Matthew goes to fly to release his bird? He says, aren't his hands cold? And then he says, do you not sometimes wish for something warmer in your bed?
Oh, yeah. Come on. Gross.
That is the vaginal reference I was referring to. He straight up says, don't you want Imperial D, which is warm? Completely says it. And then the bird's released. And so did that small little bird kill Artemis?
It broke him. Do you not remember? You broke my bird.
Yeah, I saw it, but I couldn't tell because there were three birds, right? There's the white one, Matthew's, and then the one they're going after.
And the bird they're going after. The little bird took down the big bird. Instead of the little bird going after the hunt bird, it went after the bigger bird.
That's what I thought, but it didn't make sense that a little falcon would not go after the prey. But hey, you
don't get to tell her who her prey is. You don't know. That bird might have been talking smack from her cage all day about, I'm so pretty. I'm the biggest bird here. Watch me.
I'm so pretty.
And she's like, hey, screw you, big bird.
But that was hysterical when he said, you broke my bird.
You broke my bird. What's crazy about that whole thing, and I think that's probably why he got over it in a couple of hours, is because he didn't make that bird do anything. One, he never trained that falcon. That falcon was lent to him by the emperor. So he doesn't know. I don't know of any particular portion of the book series where Matthew has claimed to be able to speak to falcons. So it's not like he made the bird kill the other bird with his brain. He's just, you know, upset that his pretty bird got hurt and broken.
Understandably, but that's a good point that he has to realize. Since he's not insane, he has to realize, but he has to realize that, yeah, there's no way Matthew could have actually caused this to happen. So yeah, I think you're probably right. Gigi, once they get back together, he's like, no, I did not get a book. But that music that you heard, it was right. There is some nasty shiz that I got. In a secret collection, there was a hand of a witch.
Of creature parts.
There was weh teeth and bits of other creatures. Like, that was disgustable. And Matthew's like, okay, that's enough. We leave tonight. And Dana's like, no, without that book, we don't. I have come back in time. I have learned, or am learning, my witchiness. I am gaining power. I have been blood-oathed by your father. I have done the dong. We are here. I like your dong, Matthew, but I have done the dong. We are mated. I'm here. We are together. We are a team.
I did not ride a horse all the way to Bohemia from France to not have a book to take home with me.
Correct. I'm not doing this. Yeah, I'm not coming this far without this. No, not going to happen. So they have a little bit of a tiff. His blood rage is raging and he's growling. And this, he says, is what mating is. He says, I can smell Rudolph on you. And she calms him. She says, you won't hurt me. And he's like, you don't know what I've done. You don't know what I can do.
She starts to give him the speech from The Help. You is kind. You is important.
But he wouldn't hurt her. She's like, you wouldn't hurt me. And he's like, no, you don't understand. Of course I wouldn't hurt you, but I would hurt every and kill and maim and everything else for you. Not for you as in you want me to, for you as in if I sense it's going to harm you, it'd be done and I can't stop it. It would be all to protect her. And he starts to walk away and she throws down fire. And this is probably visually one of my favorite, not the favorite, but one of the favorite scenes of mine, definitely in this episode. And she's like,
we're not done talking.
We are still talking.
I know. She's like, you do not walk away from me. We are not done. This conversation is not over.
Can you imagine when they have kids? Your mommy did not say you could leave right now.
I mean, I'm pretty sure I've read the books. I know what happens.
Do not walk away from me. So you are not, she says, you are not defined by the things neither of us, no one is defined by the things you've done. You are my husband and the most brilliant man I know.
You is kind.
And here comes the help.
You is important.
You are kind. You are gentle. Come back to me. And then we get our theme. And he calms.
And then they start doing it.
That's what I said.
But the room is on fire. Like, seriously? I'm like, the room is on fire.
She goes, you are Matthew de Clermont and stronger than this. Now let's make out.
In front of the fire. I mean, it's not like the bear rug in front of the fire, but like the fire is actively.
Yes, the magic fire.
It is magic fire, but magic fire still burns, which means that door is made of wood. That door should be on fire. Fire is fire, y'all.
Okay, it's Hollywood.
Fire bad.
It's Hollywood. Back at their lodgings, Gigi says the emperor sends his apologies and wants them both to view the Kunstkammer. They show up. Something has changed within me. Something is not the same.
Oh, it's all just sport. It's all just sport.
It's all of it. Exactly. So you see, you knew, you picked up what I was throwing down. He's changed his bojangles. Something is, he's trying to be nicey nice for something. So he's only nice because it serves him, obviously. He has Diana drink from a cup and then he takes her arm and they start to talk shop. And she's like, oh, what about a book? A book that contains the secrets of life itself. You know, that book. And he's all, I don't trust people. In comes Rabbi Low. Rudolph announces that he, Rabbi Low, has no talent.
Where he very publicly says, this guy sucks. He's no longer welcome. No one talk to him ever again. This is like when a high school scene, when there's like the girl is ostracized by the mean girls and they're like, no one talk to her. She is not allowed to hang out in our circle anymore. The rabbi is no longer cool.
In this case, as Lo spoke of earlier, to refuse him could be death, but to disappoint him could mean that you're just thrown out. He hasn't refused him. So he's actually, his life was just saved, most likely. He's now safe. And then he turns to them and says, if I did have the book, why would I give it to you? And she's like, huh. And she makes a metal snake on his cup into a real snake.
She has a thing with snakes, man.
She does. The funny thing is, the first time it was not on purpose.
And clearly, she should have done that. But she should have done that when she first met him. And then she probably could have gotten to the book a lot sooner. A lot of time wasted.
This is one of the ones to watch Matthew's face. Matthew's all, oh my God, she did not do this. I cannot take her anywhere. It was so good.
It was like a quadruple take.
We got to get out. What have you done? This is what I wrote. She says, I am no charlatan. And Matthew's all, oh my God. And Rudolph just had an orgasm. And then he literally says, anything you want. And I wrote, see, orgasm. So she gets to see the book. That desk that they go into in this secret, they go into this room. It's like, who knows what? The desk is pretty messy. And then they move a bookshelf and it's like
an oubliette.
Secret chamber dungeon. Kelly is there, chained up. Rudolph tells Edward to show them the book. And he's like, no, it's not the middle, no. And Deanna's like, I don't got time for this. And she uses Witch Wind to pry it from him. Flies from him, lands on the ground, opens up, and the book responds to her magic. A tree. Like, it opens up in the middle, and then a tree grows. We hear screaming. Rudolph is having another 20 orgasms watching this.
He's like, Edward Kelly, you've had this book for how long now and you've never made a tree come out of it? I don't need you anymore.
You've never done this. And if you look at Galaglass's face, it's also funny. He's like, uh-oh. And Kelly has gone mental. The book will not stop screaming. Matthew is actually also quite impressed. Rudolph gives him Kelly. He's like, I don't need them anymore. I got another thing. I'll have her. She is grabbed. And now they go, Matthew and Gigi, go in to save her. And Kelly doesn't care about, he just wants the book. So Kelly grabs the book and Diana goes to Kelly and they start to struggle about the book. This witch just threw down Witchwind and he knows like something's up. He's like, okay, he probably is not going to get it, but he's out of his head, out of his skull. So he's like taking out what he can and he tears. Now he may or may not have torn certain pages on purpose, but my gut is telling me he was just trying to tear out anything he could. He is, he's tearing the book and she screams. She's screaming, no, don't do this. She punches him and then grabs the book.
Can we talk about the tearing of? He tore those pages out with his hands.
Yeah, of course he did.
So having said that, in the first book, when she's describing the book, there are three pages missing or folios missing that were removed with a straight edge.
Oh.
So that being said, does somebody come back later and clean it up and clean the tear part out? Or does he have an amazing way of tearing so that it looks like a straight edge?
He's a master tearer.
Does he have one really long fingernail?
That's hysterical.
That leg.
That's a good question. Continuity, please.
But in the book, I was listening to it again and he tears them out there as well. So I believe it is consistent with the book, yes, but I still don't get it.
They are able to escape. Gigi basically, like, Matthew's like with Matthew's protecting Diana, Diana's protecting the book. They're running out of there and Gigi's in front of them clearing the way. He's killing everything and everyone. Stairs and stairs and stairs and more stairs and stairs and stairs and stairs. They get to the horses and they're on their way out. Okay, they get to the horses. They haven't got on the horses yet and they're taking a few minutes to, like, you know, get up and get ready.
She hands the book to him so that she can get on the horse and he takes one sniff of it and he's like, this book is made of all of these things. And I'm like, how do you know that from one sniff? That's a really good sniffer.
It is a good sniffer. And he says it's literally made from creatures. Yeah. And he calls it the Book of Death. And he's not wrong.
Girl, this is a Book of Death. I was rereading, and by rereading, I mean re-listening, to this scene not too long ago. And this scene happens off page.
Oh, nice.
They don't steal, because Galaglass and he are like, this is done. We're leaving tonight. We're going to go steal the book. We know where it is now. So they break in, steal the book, and then come back. And so all of the action happened, and they show up with the broken book. And then they retell what happened, but Diana's not there for it.
So Diana was not involved. I love this adaptation, actually, a little bit better.
But this was a good, like I said, it was a good adaptation. It allowed them to condense it. And why would you want to do a scene three different times? You know what I mean? It's like, it's bad enough to do it and then talk about it. And then, I mean, you don't want to have to break into that place so many different times in one episode, because you've got Galaglass breaking into that one room and then you have them being escorted back and then you're going to have them break back in and steal it again. So I'm like, this made way more sense adaptation wise.
I agree. So Kelly alone is ranting still about absence and desire, blood and fear. And then someone, and then we see, and so they're in his cell, the camera's on Kelly, or the camera, I think it's a wide shot, but we see Kelly, we hear Kelly. And then his jailer or his guard is like, ugh. And he doesn't care. He's like, he doesn't care about the book. He kind of is walking away. But as he goes toward the door, we have a super fast creature of some sort who kills the guard.
Clearly a vamp.
It looks like a vamp, yeah. And he comes in and he says, I care about your book, Edward.
Here's what I want to know. So he tears those pages out. Nobody gets the pages back from him. But we're to believe, based on the preview from next week, that he was rescued from the prison, I'm assuming by Benjamin Fuchs. But then he was allowed to keep the three pages and then distribute one to each of the different factions?
Well, if Fuchs was there to help him, he probably got out with those three pages.
How did he even get to ever keep those three pages?
Well, yeah, that we'll have to find out. So Bohemia, present day, it's like in a museum, present day, meaning the 21st century. We see a docent.
Well, that they've turned that dungeon.
Well, yeah, yes.
It was the same room. They've just turned it into a museum now.
Yes, it is now a museum or some kind of display. And the docent or the tour guide says, you know, these are the writings of Edward Kelly. They say they're the writings of Edward. According to the writings of Edward Kelly, there was this mysterious screaming book. We don't have it.
No one has ever been able to verify that it existed.
That it existed. But we can see the pages now. And so can Knox.
No, but those aren't the pages from the Screaming Book. Those are just the pages of Kelly's writing. Those aren't from the Book of Life. Yeah.
Correct. They're the mad writing.
And then cue to next week, Baldwin returns. He's looking fly.
Woo to the hoo.
Baldwin has been taking care of himself since he's last been on screen, y'all.
Can't wait to talk about Baldwin.
I know. And that is episode 207. Join us next week when we will be discussing episode 208.
Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode.